What's your relationship like with your emotions? It might be a strange question, but just take a minute. It really is worth considering. Emotions, they range over every possible, well, emotion. Some are wonderful, intoxicating. Others we'd prefer not to feel. Others are frankly pretty unbearable. But then there are others that are terrifyingly useful. And in times like the COVID pandemic, they can really get in our way and make it pretty tough to reconnect afterwards. Megan Webster is a registered psychologist at the Resilience Centre who's spent a fair bit of time learning about and teaching others about emotion, whether it's fear, anger, sadness or apathy. She's speaking with Lee Hatcher about how to befriend your emotions to reconnect with yourself and your community.
Megan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great to see you. Look forward to the chat. We sometimes begin a conversation like this with a bit of a definition. And I really think that that's going to be helpful when it comes to emotions. So please explain.
I like to think of emotions as signals. Signals about our needs, a bit like a check engine light on a car. It could be signalling a physical need or more of an emotional need. You can think of unpleasant emotions as warnings to signal an unmet need and pleasant emotions to let you know that your needs are met and everything's all good.
I've never heard them described like that, but I like that. So when some of our more unpleasant emotions rear their head, what can they be in addition to or as well as warning lights? And what's your wisdom on how we should handle them?
Yes, unpleasant emotions, I suppose a lot of people think of things like fear or anger or sadness. And we tend to have two kind of automatic ways that we respond to unpleasant emotions or unwanted emotions. You might find that you're either someone who's trying to push that emotion away and not think about it and not experience it, kind of squash it down.
Denial.
Yes. You might find that you are someone who really wants to examine it and figure out, almost like a puzzle. If I can just figure out where this emotion is coming from and I can just like think about it enough, then I'll be able to overcome it.
Is that often successful, or I guess you probably need some help with that rather than doing it by yourself?
It's often not very successful.
Doesn't surprise me.
No, because I suppose it depends on what kind of examining you're doing.
Yes, okay.
But both of these responses tend to make our emotions bigger, feel stronger. One, because we're ignoring the emotion and it's a signal. Its purpose is to communicate something to us. So if it hasn't been successful in communicating, it's going to get louder.
Or we could be trying to justify ourselves around or out of them.
Absolutely. I suppose the examining, just by almost becoming obsessed with the negative feeling, we can cause it to kind of perpetuate itself and last longer. And there can also be a cultural or societal influence to steer us towards suppressing our emotions. For example, how many of us have been honest when we're asked how we are and been met with a blank stare?
You really want to know.
Yeah, or a she'll be right, mate. Or even, I mean, I know personally, I often feel the need to follow it up with, but I'm okay, it's all right, it's not so bad.
When you say cultural, are you talking about ethnicity or what our own particular personality is like, or maybe both?
No, I suppose I'm talking about Australia.
Tell me more.
Just because that's where I've lived, so that's the society or culture that I know about. Of course, there are many cultures in Australia. But I suppose it's a bit like that old saying that in polite society, you don't talk about politics or religion.
Okay.
But I think many of us have learned, although we're never directly told it, that in polite company, you don't talk about unpleasant things either or unpleasant emotions.
We're a bit different today because social media is full of people raging with their emotions and with a whole lot more, I suppose.
Yes, I think on social media, a lot of people have found that that is a place where they can talk about it, where maybe they can't talk about it in the rest of their life.
And they're not identifying themselves often on social media.
Not necessarily.
Well.
Yes. Yeah, so there's less risk in that sense.
Is it risky to be emotional?
It can be. sometimes you may be accused of being unreasonable or out of your right mind if you're very emotionally expressive or the other person just doesn't understand why you feel the way you do. We call that invalidation, and it can be very difficult to bear and just leave you feeling very alone.
What's the extent to which our own DNA determines what our emotions are like as opposed to the environment in which we live? DNA also covers our childhood experiences, I suppose, family, influences at work, culture again.
Sure. Yes, like most things, our experience of our emotions is determined a little bit by DNA and genetics and a little bit by environmental factors. Yes,
but you wouldn't underestimate the DNA thing.
No, certainly not. In more recent times, there's a theory that some people are born with what's called a higher threat sensitivity. So regardless of what experiences you have later on, from birth, you're more likely to pick up on little cues and signals in your environment that something might be dangerous.
Oh. Yeah. So that truly is DNA.
Yeah. On the other hand, the environmental factors can be, you know, we learn from each other, we learn socially. So just seeing how other people in our life, our parents and other family members, how expressive they are or how much they hold back, what things they react to and what they don't, we learn what's appropriate. But also through how other people react to our emotions, we learn what is okay to express or not express.
The more I do podcasts like this, the more I think, oh, could I just have another go as a parent?
I think every parent feels that way, don't they?
I know.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting question. Do we get messages or communication from our emotions? You kind of touched on it a bit as the signal theme.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, they are signals. So there's something they're signalling.
Yes.
And we do. We get messages about met and unmet needs and messages about safety and
yes.
threat. There can be a lot of nuance to this depending on your past experiences and depending on your beliefs about the world. But in general terms, fear is often a signal of our need for safety, whether we feel physically safe or emotionally safe,
yes.
or that we're in safe company. During the first few years of the pandemic, a lot of people felt a welcome reprieve from unpleasant emotions just because if you're out less, you're not faced with as many of the day-to-day challenges that we are often faced with. Others found that the monotony and the isolation was really unpleasant and led to loneliness and other painful emotions.
Which is more what we've been told has happened, but I've never heard someone say, well, for some people that was a bit of a relief to be on their own.
Yeah, it certainly was. I think for people who often find being around lots of other people threatening,
yes.
it felt quite safe to be in a controllable small environment just with people they know well.
My little cocoon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think for both types of people, stepping back out after lockdowns was quite hard. Many people, I think, found that they were more emotionally reactive to normal everyday things than they had been previously.
Mm. Like even just going to the shops or...
Or going to a friend's house or the pub. Yeah, absolutely.
Why was that? Why the more reactive response?
Yeah, I think to some extent it was through a lack of recent practice, just being out of practice and feeling less competent in the world.
Yep.
I think also for a long time we had every day a continuous message that being around other people was dangerous, which was true.
Yes.
Absolutely. But it's hard to adjust back into, okay, maybe it's safer now than it was before.
And especially because it's kind of still around, we never really know.
Yes.
For sure.
We never really know for sure, and there are still people for whom it is extremely dangerous.
Yes, yeah.
And I think another piece is the unpredictability. The rules changed, it seems like every day. The numbers changed. How much longer this lockdown is going to be happening for changed.
Yeah, the responses changed.
The responses changed. I think a lot of us got very used to the idea that we just don't know what's coming next, which is a very, very scary thing.
That's a very good point, yeah.
There's also the issue of self-efficacy, which is the general sense that we can do things, that we're capable, that we can face challenges.
Yep.
Being able to believe in yourself is a huge part of managing unpredictable things and being able to be flexible.
Maybe I'm a bit of a control freak, but as I hear you speaking, I'm wondering if our need for control is pretty closely tied to our emotions. And if that's right, how can we better deal with that dynamic?
Yeah, I think that is right.
Okay.
It's a need like any other. If you think about it, a sense of control is really important for being able to do anything. The example of driving always comes to mind for me. If I don't believe that I know how to drive, if I don't believe others know how to drive, if I don't believe that I can maintain control of the car if something goes wrong, I'd never go driving.
No.
I'd never go anywhere.
And I'd never go near you.
Absolutely, and that would be really wise. It's very much linked. It's something we need to be able to believe in.
Yes.
And most of us believe that we have more control in life than we really do.
That's a good point.
But I think that belief is helpful. It allows us to predict and plan for things. It helps us to make goals and work towards them. If there's too much of a sense of uncontrol, we get a bit paralyzed. But then on the other hand, if there's an inflated sense of control, we can get stuck there too, because if things change, we might want to deny that it's happening.
Yes.
Or we might be very inflexible in our plans.
You can be a somewhat unpleasant person to be around.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You definitely can. I think we need to be able to find a good middle ground, to be able to acknowledge that there are things we're in control of and there are things we're good at, while also knowing that things we're not expecting will happen and things outside of our control will happen, and we need to deal with them as they come.
Okay. Now, here's something I'd like to do, which is a bit different.
Mm.
Take your psychologist's hat off
mm-hmm.
for just a moment.
Sure.
I'd like to know how you emerged, how you went through the worst of the lockdowns and the COVID kind of upheaval. How did you emerge?
Yes, I found it quite difficult to step back out and emerge. Actually, yeah. I still remember the first time I went to my local shopping centre after our big 3-month lockdown in 2021. It felt very strange. While I was with my friend in the shopping centre, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when we went our separate ways, my mind got foggy. It was hard to remember what I was trying to accomplish that day. And it felt very surreal.
Because you weren't used to that? Or you're out of practice?
I think because I was out of practice. It was a very big space. I'd spent 3 months in a relatively very small space, just in my home.
Yes.
And I'd gone outside, but this was a massive building full of more people than I'd seen in months and months and months.
So is that an emotional response, would you say?
I believe so.
Okay.
It was overwhelm and probably a bit of anxiety too. Yep. I imagine some of those things I mentioned, the large space, lots of people, lots of noise, and the bright lights in a shopping centre, all of those things can be cues of threat. And I think they were for me on that day. So I had to just muddle along the best I could.
But if I hear anything from the resilience centre, resilience comes from connecting with people.
Absolutely.
Or in that case, reconnecting with people. So how do you navigate through that?
That's a good question. I think it starts with noticing that emotional response yourself.
Yes.
Remember those two instincts I mentioned before, push away or examine. This is a little bit different. Just noticing and acknowledging what I'm feeling, not just naming the emotion, but how does it actually feel? Like I said, my head was foggy. I felt a bit shaky. Noticing all of those physiological signals too. That in itself can help you calm down a little bit.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Just to acknowledge this is happening.
Just to acknowledge this is happening, and I suppose it makes it feel a little bit less out of control if there are things about it you can recognise.
Yes, okay.
Then it might sound a little strange, but I like to think of it as talking to my emotions. Now, I didn't stand in the shopping centre and talk out loud to my emotions.
That's a bit of a relief, but I think that's an interesting concept. Tell you all.
It's asking your emotion, why are you here? What do you want me to know? And sometimes when you initially start questioning, you'll get some very surface level sort of thoughts, like it's scary, I don't like it, I want to go home. Those are usually not the actual thing that your emotion is signaling. Sometimes you have to wait a bit longer, dig a little deeper. Because in that situation, I think my overwhelm was telling me, I haven't done this in a really long time. I'm not sure I remember how. I'm not sure I'm ready to do it on my own yet.
That's what I was wondering. Mm. Do you ask your emotion, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah. Once you've figured out the unmet need, what your emotion wants you to do is meet it. So you try and meet it. I wasn't ready to do it on my own yet. I sent a text message back to my friend to come back.
Wow.
And we finished off the shopping together, which was much, much easier.
So through that process, you were able to send that text?
Yes. And I think when you can connect with other people, it doesn't have to be, maybe you don't have a friend with you at the time. It could be anybody. It could be a friendly barista. You don't have to tell them you're freaking out, but
no.
You could try and connect with them if that's the need.
That's possible, yeah.
If that's the need, then a smile, some eye contact, it can really just change the way you're feeling. And it should if that's the actual need that's being signalled.
And the more you do it, the better you get, is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The more you do it, the better you get. The more you do it, the less you have to consciously go through these steps as well. Yeah. You get familiar with what your different emotions try to tell you. And once you feel connected and that sense of social support, then it's easier to step out, which I would say is the next step, to act informed by your emotion rather than react to it. Reacting to it would be, I'm scared, I'm just going to stay home. Or I'm scared, I'm just going to get under my blanket, not talk to anybody.
Yes.
But that's not really what you need, or that's not what I needed in that situation. So you need to act informed by your emotion and the needs that it's signalling, rather than reacting to the emotion and the initial urges it's giving you.
Yeah.
And when you reflect on that, you'll be able to determine whether you were on the right track or whether you need to give it another go. The reflection helps to solidify that process. Whenever you try something different or try to learn something new, reflection is a really important step just to double check that your choice was the best you could have made.
Okay.
If not, it's no big drama, but it might mean, well, next time I'll try something different instead.
Well, it seems to me you've emerged with great equilibrium and even more wisdom, Megan.
Well, thank you. It took a while.
That's for all of us. Thank you so much indeed for a great conversation.
Thank you, Lee.
Well, thanks again for joining us in our Absorbing Resilience and Reinvention series from the Resilience Centre. I'm Lynn Worsley. Catch our other podcasts in this series and many other great conversations on our website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.